We do so many, you see, observe all these ceremonies, rituals, we perform rituals, read scriptures, say prayers. What is this for? This is only to create interest in you in a way to just have some love for God. If you say all these prayers and not a single tear drops sheds from your tears in sweet remembrance of the Lord, well, such like practices will carry you nowhere. It is just like a gymnastics that you do with no results. So, way back to God is love, you see. So, love all. Love and all things shall be added unto you. In the sight of St. John, you see, when he was old enough, he could not walk freely. He used to walk with a stick in hand, by the sport of a stick in hand. From school, managers that went off invited him to give a talk to the children in the school. He came up, head down, he was very old, you see. He just raised up his head and said, "Boys, love one another." Then he sat down again, he raised his hands and said, "Boys, love one another." Again, third time he raised his head and again repeated the same thing, "Boys, love one another." Then he kept quiet. The secretary in charge, after waiting for a few minutes, then he, perhaps he was considering that further talk will be given. So when St. John did not speak, he simply asked him, "Have you nothing more to say?" He said, "Well, I have nothing more to say. That is all I have to say, love one another. Love and all things shall be added unto you." Sometimes on account of position we hold, sometimes on account of having wealth, and possessions. The life does not consist in possessions and wealth, you see, as I justified before. Life consists in contacting your conscious self with the all consciousness only. He said, "Well, love and all things shall be added unto you." You know, once Christ said, "Well, look here, I give you a new commandment. What? Love one another. What for? So that the people may know that you are coming to me." So these are the qualifications of selfless service, you see. Selfless service also in two ways, you see, one physically, when another man is sick, he wants your attendance, do it. Selfless. Somebody else needs you for some public service, they do it for you. That's the first part of the selfless service that you can perform, you see, by a physical body. And the other is financially. You see? Financially, just earn money with a hard dint, you see, of brow, sweat of brow. Honesty, that's the first thing. And then keep up, maintain your bodies, maintain your families, and out of that, just reserve something, give away something for share with others who are needy, who are just unclothed, though they have got nothing to eat, and also for the purpose of the public service. And especially where the people can have spiritual uplift. So these are the qualifications of a man who would like to see God. I also, I was just an by you, this has been my last talk, that I will also require you, each one of you, to love one another, you see. If you love anybody, first of all, love God. God resides in every heart. Naturally, you have to love all humanity. When you love all humanity, are you going to rob anybody or kill anybody or steal anything from the other one? Not really. These are the two commandments on which all other commandments hang on, you see. The work of all prophets hang on, I tell you. When you are prepared that way, you are a fit person to see God. That message at whose feet? First of all, I told you have to come to some master who has himself seen God. First thing, he will be able to show you also. If he has not seen himself, how can he show you? The question was asked from Guru Nanak when there was a God. He said, yes, behold, God is seen everywhere. I see God everywhere. How to see? He said, those eyes are different. Eyes are not of flesh and bone, but different with which we can see God. And it is, which are those eyes? That is the inner eye or the single eye, what Christ speaks of. The light of the body is the eye. If thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. That is the eye, with the meek man, but now closed. When that inner eye is open, with that you will see the light of God within you. Definition of a true Sikh, as given by the 10th Guru of the Sikhs, is who sees the full effulgent light of God within, only he is a pure Sikh, pure heart. Mohammedans also say the same thing. Those who go up the mountain of Tur, that is, rises above the body and sees the light of God, he is a true Mohammedan. And as regards the Christian, it is also said, he is only the true Christian who sees the light of God. Hindus also define the same. So true Christianity, true Sikhism, true Hinduism, and true Mohammedanism lies in what? In seeing God, the light of God, which is within you. You see? For that, and those men, those masters, who teachers, name them by any name you like, those who have analyzed themselves from the body and known own self first, and their inner eye is open to see the light of God, you see, only, and they are competent to give you first-hand experience, however little it may be, there's no question of quantum, you see. At the feet of such a master, you will also be able to see God and to hear the voice of God. So this is the question before us. How can we see God? I will just give you a digest of a hymn from the 5th Guru of the 6th. You see? In which he deals with this subject, you see. What does he say? He says, well, how can we see God, you see? That's a question each, that's a common question before us all. The elementary things, you see, required, the qualification I've just given you. Who is having that qualification, he comes up to a somebody who is on the way, he is simply telling him, all right, how to see God, that is your question. And the first and foremost thing is what? He says, you must meet such a person who has transcended the physical, astral and mental planes, causal planes, known himself and contacted God, you see, and risen into him. Arse, who has become the mouthpiece of God, I said. Mouthpiece of God. Who speaks as inspired by God. Only such a man will be able to give you the first experience. If you sit at the feet of such a person who has seen God, only then you will be able to see God. This is what Christ also said, you see. He said, God knows the Son, and Son knows the Father, and others whom the Son of Man reveals. The similar thing has been given by the third Guru of the sixth, Guru Amar Das. He says, it is a fundamental rule that without sitting at the feet of a true master, God has made it a fundamental rule that whoever sits at the feet of a true master, only he will come after me. You see the same parallel thought, you see, given out by masters in their own language at different times when they visit the earth. So their first qualification is to sit at the feet of a practical master, I would say now. And this is almost said by almost all saints, you see. Maulana Rum, a Mohammedan saint, says, well, look here, if you want to go to a pilgrimage, place of pilgrimage, just take somebody who has already has been to that place of pilgrimage. Because he knows the way, he has been there, he knows all the ways and other things, how to stay on the way, how we will reach there, what are the means which will help us to reach there. And it is better always to just find out somebody who has seen that place. And who should be? To what religion he should belong, he said. No matter, he may be a Hindu, he is a Mohammedan saint. He may be a Hindu. He may be a Turk. He may belong to any social religion, that makes no matter. He must be one who has visited the place of pilgrimage. Those who have seen her, those who have seen God, take him along with you. For instance, the man has to go to a foreign land. What does he do? He looks up directories, finds out how I will go, how I will just have to go to some foreign land, and how I will take a ticket, which ship I should go, you see, and where that will land, and that place where might be, I do not know the language of that place, what will be intermediary, you see, for interpretation. And if I go at all to that place, where should I live? I've got no acquaintance there. For this purpose, you look up directly. In the meantime, when you are searching for that thing, a man comes up and says, well, all right, you are going to such and such foreign country, then just a man has come back from that very country. What will he do? That is, he will close the directory all at once and run up to the man who is coming from that country. He did not. That's but nature. When he goes to him, he asks him questions, well, look here, what is the way and how will we go? He has seen, he will say. That's the difference, you see. The man who has seen, you see, he is very definite about it. He's got weight in his words. He's out of full conviction he speaks. No doubt, no ray of uncertainty in his mouth, is it? That is naturally that appeals to the man who goes to him. And by the way, he mentions all that I am again going to that country next week. How do you find yourself there? All please, you need no directives now, because the man who has been to that place is just going along with you. Similarly, this way, please. We are now identified with the body. So much so that we cannot differentiate. We have to leave the body someday. There, macrocosm is in the microcosm. You just leave the body and there are further planes, astrocosm, and beyond, you see. You traverse all these things, go reach your true home, you see. That is, who has traversed these things, has been to this, he goes over there daily. If you come across such a man, naturally you feel very happy. Now, ABC, all the teachings of such a master who has gone beyond, he does not touch your social religion, I say. He says, remain where you are. They say always, give things, give to Caesar, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's. And render to God the things that are of God's. Isn't it? He does not touch the outer aspects of your religion. He comes, simply touches who you are, what you are, how can you transcend the body, leave the physical plane, transcend into the beyond, and ultimately reach your true home. How to open the inner eye and see the light of God. Kingdom of God is within you, he says. So, Guru Arjuna says, if you are hard up to fulfill the highest aim of your life of seeing God, first requirement is to just sit at the feet of somebody who has seen God. Mere intellectual man will not be able to give you that experience. Of course, he will give you all intellectual information. When you want to become a doctor, you see, you must sit at the feet of some doctor, you see. He can make you a doctor. Just by anatomy, by operations, he has seen how the system is working and this and that. The doctor works wonders by operation. They take out everything else and still the man is alive, you see. If you just go only to a druggist, could you become a doctor? He'll of course give you so many recipes, he has been prescriptions. Give a various doctor for a certain disease, he will be able to give you all that. But this is such and such is the prescription, such and such like that. But he cannot make you a doctor, you see. Similar this way, this is question of self-analysis. Man who has analyzed himself from the body, known himself and known God, transcended all these physical natural causal planes, actual, when he dies he transcends the body, when he comes back he works in the body. He has that competency. When you sit at the feet of only such a person, only then you will be able to see that. The man who has simply remembered all the holy scriptures of the world, he might be giving you a very wonderful talk, quoting here and there from Vedas and Shastras and Muhammad and the Sikh scriptures of the Bible, everywhere. First of all, he would not be able to reconcile these things, I tell you. He may be quoting you so many things, but he does not know. This is just like a, I tell you, some sandalwood or some very precious and delicious sweets, which are just laden by the ash. That ash is carrying that arm. But he does not eat, does not taste. Similarly, any food which is just going into the pudding, sweet puddings are sweet dishes, that does not taste anything. Similarly, the man who is just his brain full of this merchandise of the Holy Scriptures, he has no taste of that. How can you do anything? The first and foremost requirement is to sit at the feet of some practical master who has analyzed himself, whose inner eye is open to see the light of God, and who is competent to give you first an experience thereof. How little is it? This is what if such a master gives you initiation, puts you on the way, only then you will be able to get on otherwise. This is first requirement. Now naturally the question arises, such a master, what will he teach you? Can past masters help us? Are those needed? When I say the need of the past masters as well, why? They had this experience in their lives. They left us their experiences in the form of the Holy Scriptures, which are worth in tons and gold and rubies and emeralds and diamonds. But by reading them, that will create in you an interest to have that life. And that is all. But present day, somebody is also needed who has got that experience in himself, his authentic body, consciousness of the body. His inner eyes open, he sees the light of God. He has those experiences which are given in the Holy Scriptures. Such a present man, living man is required, who is able to give you that experience, you see. He is also needed. Past gurus and masters are needed for the purpose of testimony. Oh, they all say one thing, you see. They speak of the same experience in their own ways, in their own languages. But they are a sealed book, I would say, handed down to us from posterity to posterity, but we have not tasted them. Those things which we seem to speak of, those are within you. Unless you know how to invert, how to transcend the body. Body is the temple of God. Unless you invert and see those things for your own self, you are not convinced, my friend. The saints say, so now you may be reading all the scriptures, you may be hearing even the masters, I would say. You may be intellectually satisfied. But full conviction arises only when you see the things for your own self. First you can take up the thing as an experimental deya. But when you are made to sit and given the first experience, naturally you are convinced that there is a way up. So the first and foremost requirement is to meet or to sit at the feet of some master who is competent to give you that experience, and he has that experience himself too. This is the first thing, you see. If such a man puts you on the way back to God, you will be on the way and you will be having those experiences. This is a fundamental truth. Then such a man, what does he teach? That's the question arises. What would he say? There are teachers and teachers. They are teachers of the social religions. They will tell you how to live in a certain social religion, how to perform certain rites and ceremonies. They have just advised you to read certain scriptures, just carry out the element in it. It's element in it. And the such masters also teach us, just do the duty in a real sense, I would say, there will be unity between man and man. But unfortunately, no one knows what happens. They simply say, well, look here, who belongs to this particular social religion, only he will be saved, and no other. Well, God made man, excuse me. Man is in soul body. God did not stamp any body with it, whether he is a Christian or a Hindu or a Mohammedan or a Sikh. Can you transcend the body, who you are, what you are? The question I put to my master, well, who you are, you simply stand and look at us. If God is a Hindu, I'm a Hindu, if he's a Christian, I'm a Christian, you see. If he's a Mohammedan, I'm a Mohammedan. Religion of the soul is of the same as of God, you see. God is all consciousness, and our souls are also conscious being, conscious entity. Man is social, and it is natural to live in some social body. That is made by changing one social body or the other, cannot ensure that you will be saved. You will have to qualify yourself for the way back to God. And further, to sit at the feet of somebody who has just known himself and known God. Call him by any name you like. Now, such, when you go to such a man, what does he say? He doesn't touch your outer form, I tell you. He says, remain where you are. Not the present teachers of the social religion, what they say. Well, look, okay, if you have this social body, well, you are saved. You believe in such a thing, that will go. No. Excuse me if I say, the Christians say that who has God taken up the form of Christianity, only they will be saved. And the Sikhs say that only those who are in the Sikh form and believing in the Sikhs, they will be saved. Mohammedans say, well, who do not believe in the Quran, you see, are the Prophet Mohammed, they will all go to heaven. So who is true then? Either all are wrong, you see? Well, of course, there are two sides of the religion. One, the outer objective side, the other, the inner side. Objective side, purpose of the objective side is to prepare the ground. That will do the work of a midwife, helping in bringing out children. But a midwife does not give birth to a child, but that is going ahead. The health effect, that is necessary. To remain in some social religion is a blessing. But when you come to such a master with that qualification I just give you, the subjective side of the teaching, esoteric teaching, what he would say, he says, well, look here, you are after finding God. Where to find him? See, the men of the social religion, what they advise, all right, read this scripture, you will find God. Attend that particular temple or mosque or church daily, you will find God. Just visit such and such place of pilgrimage, you will find God. This generally, these social religion teachers say, but the man of this type, who has known God, what does he say? He says, well, if you want to see God, go with you. The kingdom of God is with you. Kingdom of God cannot be had by observance, you see, but by inversion, I would say. So for that purpose, the kingdom of God is within you, not outside. Unless you transcend the body consciousness, you will not have access into it.
Good morning, and welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The talk you just heard was the first half of a farewell talk given by Master on August the 1st, 1955, in Beaumont, California. Our reader this morning is Christine Clevenger. Hello, Christine.
Hello, David. This morning, I'm going to continue reading Master's talk called Right Understanding Exalted. If 100 moons and 1,000 suns arose, with all this light, there is but dense darkness without a guru. If the inner eye is not open, how can one see? This eye is called the Shivnetra, the third eye, the single eye. If thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. Also, if the 10 senses are controlled, in that soul will the light become effulgent. But how to control and invert the senses? This secret, the Satguru tells. All outer learning has connection with the attention when scattered only. But the true knowledge is gained through inversion. It is the ABC of spirituality. Where the world's philosophies end, there the true religion starts. So meeting the Satguru opens the path of right understanding by experiencing the inner knowledge. When the Satguru is met, inversion occurs, brother. Even for outer learning, we need someone's help. So naturally, this more exacting type of knowledge cannot be achieved without the help of an expert. That small experience given at the beginning is then increased by daily contact. Death, while living, unravels the mystery. You become the one who sees. When the attention withdraws and the body becomes numb, then you can say, yes, I have experienced it. The one who receives the experience can acknowledge it as practical proof, even if it be but little. It is like a scientific subject, and not one on the level of sense or feeling. For the soul itself has the experience, and as it rises higher through the astral and causal planes, the more experience will it get. Finally, the soul sees that I and my Father are one. He works through me. Concentration upon the indescribable sound is the knowledge. The fruit-giving tree of the Guru is green, and its shade is deep. The Guru is likened to a huge shady tree whose leaves are verdant, whose flowers are full of fragrance. Those who sit in its shade receive the coolness. Maulana Rumi says that our heart should sit beside one who knows its condition. He then himself asks how that can happen, and replies that one should sit under the tree whose flowery fragrance permeates, and should not roam around the world aimlessly, but rather sit in the shop where honey is sold. For in the world many things are taught in huge boiling pots, and one should not go there with one's cup without first giving thought. There is a lot of black marketing in the world, but more so where so-called spirituality is concerned. There was an occasion when Christ became very angry with the Pharisees for defiling the precincts of the temple with their money-changing activities, and he drove them out. Bullishaw has described this very clearly. He says, "In holy places live the cheats. In the temples live the thugs. In the mosques live the professionals. But true lovers live elsewhere." It illustrates the decline in man. Religions are well and good, but they should have a proper teacher, a realized soul. Instead, one finds this poor soul who is earning money for his living this way. He must do this or be cast out. Now, what can people get from such poor beings? All these social bodies were based upon a noble thought, but everything has gone down with corruption. They are not up to the mark now. They want offerings of money, flowers, etc., and then give their blessing, saying, "Go, child, your salvation is assured," giving some holy food to complete the transaction. The same good old custom has corrupted itself. The customs were made for the purpose of helping the people to gain freedom, but they have become binding chains in themselves. A man who belongs to a certain religion is afraid to visit another. This is the result of wrong teaching. Our Hazur, Baba Sawan Singh Ji, used to say, "This is a gift given to you. Go where you like, and if you find anything better than that, then take it, and I will also go there." We are devotees of the truth and should go wherever we can get it. The fruit-giving tree of the Guru is green, and its shade is deep. In the Guru's bandar, precious jewels are found. The Guru's bandar, our treasure house, is a place where one gets something invaluable. Go and sit in that refreshing shade. After trudging long in the hot sun, a man gets re-enlivened for a while when he sits in the cool shade of a leafy tree. Sitting at the feet of a realized soul, one becomes more conscious of what is real and of the world's unreality. In the company of the Master, there is awareness of the Lord. In his company, the Lord seems very near, and when one leaves that company, one reverts to the same condition. This jewel of knowledge, which is right understanding, is found in the Guru's bandar and is gained at his feet. In the Guru's bandara, you get the pure love of Nam. First, he told us we would get the precious jewels, the jewels of understanding. Gurbani is most praiseworthy, for not only does it contain the words of the Masters, but those words are such that they explain fully so that there is no misunderstanding. Then, he says, you will get the pure love of Nam. It means that there is such a name which is pure. God is Enam, nameless. He has no name. He is absolute God. When he expressed himself, he said, "I am one, but will become many." In the Gurbani, it is written, "From one source, millions and millions of rivers sprouted forth." The Quran says, "He ordered, and all creation came into being." The power which came into expression is called Nam, and various other names given by the Rishis and Mahatmas, but these are merely names. The pure Nam is that power, the truth, the contact with which is given in the Guru's Bhandara. Anyone can give mere words and tell the person to go and repeat a certain name that they have allotted to the Lord, although every respect should be given to all his names. I sacrifice myself on all thy names. Now the question arises, what is that Nam, repeating which one crosses the ocean of life? Those who have not found the Guru consider that the words applied to God mean everything. The Hindus say that he is Om or Ram. The Muslims say that he is Allah. And the Sikhs say that he is Waheguru. Who is correct? Each insists that salvation is gained through their own choice of name, but in fact, these are merely words given to that holy power of Nam. We should practice that Nam, which is the power itself, the truth. Only through that Nam can salvation be received. The controller of the nine Riddhis, or supernatural powers, is the Lord's Nam, the water of life, which resides in this body. This is not a subject for physical sight. You must rise above the senses to see these things in truth. This Nam has an enchanting sweetness. Anyone can teach outer ritual, prayers, mantras, but with prayerful thought, I say that if only religious leaders would give out the correct teachings, there would be great love among all men. This is the basic aim of all religions. Why is there so much conflict? Because of the different levels of understanding. They regard everything from the levels of mind, intellect, emotions, feelings, and inference, and it is all due to the lack of right understanding. Remember that this type of people has always stood against the God-realized souls, and principally the learned priests, who were at the level of mind. The great saint, Guru Nanak Sahib, was called an enticer and was said to be misleading the people. He was refused entry into one city called Kasur. Some people have propagated that I am the representative of the negative power and that no person should look upon my face for fear of being misled. Just see, even today, these things are still going on. With the full mercy of the Guru, you get the true merchandise. If in your search you have found a truly God-realized soul who has realized that which is written of in the scriptures, has actually experienced that, then there is no need to read the holy books which speak of such a Guru. You may put them aside. To get what they got, meet such a realized soul who will take one along the path that he has traveled. No one has ever achieved any real progress just by reading, and never will. To see this worldly ocean is terrifying, having no beginning nor end. There is no boat, no raft, no pilot. The world can be likened to a vast ocean, frightening to regard. We can see no beginning or end to it all. Furthermore, we can see no means of crossing this ocean safely. We have only the mind as a helper. The mind, with its four departments, its reservoir of impressions, its reasoning powers, its intellect, and its ego, all are blockages, keeping one from the truth. Their help will only extend to considering the subject. Reasoning is helpful, but nothing can be realized through it. So is there any real means of crossing this worldly ocean? Guru Nanak himself answers this. The ship is the Satguru, whose gaze will take you across. A single glance from the Satguru can put you on that ship. That is the ship of Nam, the connection to which is given only by the Satguru. It is the very key to salvation. In the book Balkand, which is part of the Ram Charitra Mansa, written by Tulsidas, it is said in praise of Nam, "With or without attribute, both are Brahm's image, but I consider Nam higher." Non-power is higher than any attributed or non-attributed form of God, but indescribable. That is why it is said, "How much can I say in praise of Nam?" Ram himself could not sing its praises. This is a clear comparison of Nam and Ram, showing Nam to be higher, for even Lord Rama could not find the words to praise it. O Nanak, with devotion, read hundreds of thousands of tons of paper. With limitless ink, write at the speed of the wind. But your description cannot be scribed, O Nam. The whole world's scriptures would weigh less than 100 tons, but he speaks of reading many hundreds of thousands of tons of books, of writing as fast as the wind. But Nam cannot be expressed in words. Nam is Nam. All say Nam, Nam, Nam. But no one has got it. Nam is unique. If you want to understand what Nam is, go to the God-realized person in whom it is manifested. In his bandar, that treasure is stored. All other treasure and wealth is perishable. To cease his remembrance, even for a second, all happiness leaves and misery results. Why are we unhappy? O Nanak, the whole world is unhappy. Only he is happy who is sustained by the Nam. God is our life sustainer, and we are truly happy only when we turn our face toward him. When we turn away from God, misery enters our lives. Swamiji Maharaj says, "O soul, you are unhappy, we know, from the day you deserted the Shabd and befriended the mind. That tongue should be burned out, which does not repeat the Nam." The tongue, which has never tasted that sweet nectar, is in fact worthless, fit only to be cut out and thrown away. We should be grateful to him who gave us life and goes on sustaining us, but we never give this a single thought. Much loved are the gifts, forgotten the giver. Knows not, gives never a thought to the awaiting death. With this tongue of thought, go on being thankful to him. The thankless tongue should be burned out. When the physical crumbles and death makes his claim, there is naught but misery and regret. If this important work is not done in this life, the misery will increase with the physical form's decay. When you go into the keeping of Yama, the Lord of Death, you will then bear the fruit of whatever you sow during life, and so around and around the cycle you will continue. But if you rise above the senses and taste the sweet nectar of Nam, then your coming and going will cease. Living at the sense level will keep you tied to the everlasting chain of births and death, no matter how many good karmas you accrue. The jeweled wealth is of the beyond. It is separate from the senses, and so cannot be realized through them. The guru who keeps and can give this treasure is very rare. During the life of King Janak, only one could be found in the whole of India, namely Ashtavakra. Sukhdev Swami found only one also, King Janak. Of course, the more there are, so much the better for the world. It makes no difference where a realized soul lives, in the jungles or in the towns. When you meet a perfect master with all attributes, salvation is gained while living, laughing, and wearing ordinary clothes. He will not advise you to leave home and household duties, but he will say that out of 24 hours each day, set aside 2 to 3 hours for this holy purpose. This work must be done as well as the worldly duties, so earn your own living and stand on your own feet. In olden days, those who renounced the world for the spiritual life never collected money for their sustenance, and they had no possessions. They ate whenever food was offered them. But these days, this type of life has become a business, and they have started collecting not only goods but money too. It is now something far different from the original purpose, and blind men are leading the blind. This is mainly why the name of Gurudam is scorned by the people at large, who are saying that reading the scriptures at home is better than going to a guru. It's mine, they say, but they left without body, wealth, wife, or family. The whole human race is engaged in possessing, but when each soul leaves, he takes nothing with him, neither possessions nor people. Not even the body, which was his first worldly companion, will accompany him. He has frittered away his whole life's attention. Without the Nam, all outer riches have no value, because they have forgotten the path. We are the indweller of the physical form, but have become identified with it, so much so that we have forgotten ourselves. We see, not at the level of soul, but at the body's level. It is a very deep forgetfulness. Rich and poor, literate and illiterate, alike are all in the same state of illusion. The body is made of matter, the world is made of matter, and both are changing at the same rate. Being identified with it, we consider we are still and unchanging. The whole world is suffering from two kinds of illusion, Jhanmaya and Chaitanmaya, coarse and subtle types of illusion. We rise out of the clutches of these when some master soul brings us above them and opens the spiritual eye and puts us on the path. Without this, there is no difference in having outer knowledge and not having it. The spiritual ignorance remains. Actually, the man without intellectual learning will succeed more rapidly on the spiritual path, for if he is told go up, he will start without delay or question. But the learned man will stand and ask, why? How many steps are there? What is at the top? I hope I will not slip and fall. This intellectual hesitancy will keep him where he is. He will never climb up. However, it is true that he who has learning but does not allow it to stand in the way will be more valuable than others. But such cases are rare. Outer knowledge is like a garland of flowers adorning a realized person who will explain the truth in many ways. Such knowledge in an unrealized soul is like a burden on a donkey's head. By serving the true master, the Guru Mukh will know the unexpressed. Become the one who serves him in whom the ever-existent and imperishable Lord is manifested, the Master. Who can know him? Only a Guru Mukh. And what is a Guru Mukh? He who is one with the Guru. One fakir has said that the seekers of God have lost him in the waves of the mind's ocean, in the thoughts of the intellect. Go and seek for some true master for the right understanding. Coming and going around the wheel of life according to the karmas, how can what is written be erased? The law is the law. What is written comes from the beyond. One must go through it. Those who have love for the world and its environments will return to it again and again. Good actions will bring them happiness, and bad actions misery. Hell, heaven, again and again birth. By rising above the senses and experiencing inner knowledge, one can become ne-karma, or free from karmas. For such a person, the perpetual wheel of life ceases to turn. The only reason for our continual return to the worldly life is our attachment to it. When we love God a little, it is usually for some worldly gain and not to realize him for his own sake. When the God-realized person gives the right understanding, he teaches the true values of life and how to make the best use of everything. Without God's name, there is no freedom, but the Guru's knowledge gives the connection. We cannot realize this name or nam by ourselves, for whatever practices we do are at the sense level. We must depend on the knowledge of the Guru, For life comes from life, and light is lit from light. And I will stop here and continue the remaining portion of this at a future reading. This reading was a continuation of Right Understanding Exalted, which can be found in the June 1972 Satsang. Thank you to our gracious Master.
And thank you, Christine, for reading for us. There were 89 people at today's Satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
You have been just given this man body by the grace of God to enable you to go back to your home. But remain here, pay off your debts, give and takes, you see, and find your way back to God.